Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to the Heat Check Podcast. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of allyoucanheat.com. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, David?
Feeling pretty good, man. How are you?
Good. You're not feeling upset that you got passed up for the Heat's backup center position, that they went with Hassan Whiteside instead?
I'm actually nursing a sore ankle as we speak, so they probably wouldn't even have offered me a 10-day contract. But you know what? There's always next year.
Well, did you even get the physical, or you just kind of told them, don't even bother, it's not worth the trip?
I walked in there hungover with a cigarette dangling off my lips, and they kicked me out of the American Airlines arena, so I'm not sure what that means.
Really? Because I thought that's how Pat Riley just enters the...
The Godfather, that's exactly how he enters it. Every time he walks in the arena, he just mandatory cigarette lit for him.
So let's talk about this great news. Hassan Whiteside is on the verge of signing with the Miami Heat, as reports the South Florida Sun Sentinel. So I think immediately what people think are like, hey, why not Ken Birch? Sounds to me that they just went with the more the veteran guy. Hassan's like, he's a center. He's different than Ken Birch. He's a little bit longer. He's a little bit better of a scorer. Obviously, he spent more time in the NBA. He spent a couple of years in Sacramento. He was with Memphis for a little bit. So it looks like they just kind of went with the more veteran guy, and they're just leaving Ken Birch hidden on the SoFi Skyforce.
I actually hit up a friend of mine that knows a lot more about D-League play, and he mentioned a couple of things. That one, he's 7 feet tall, so obviously a little bit more length.
Can you drop names of who you reached out to?
It's Chris Reichert.
Okay.
He writes for a couple of different sources.
He's for SB Nation, right?
Right. He does Ridiculous Upside, I think.
Ridic Upside, that's right. Yeah. That's what I thought.
And dropping names already.
Come on, you can't just say friends. What does that mean? Chris Broussard's
leak sources. Leaks. Yeah, absolutely. So he mentioned that he's an adequate rim protector.
Okay, adequate's good.
Yeah, much better than.
Better than what they have now.
Right. From what I saw, the videos like online, he looks kind of slow. I've never seen him play myself, so I kind of went to the resource and saw different, highlights, if you want to call them that. And he looks pretty shaky. You know, he takes like a long motion to get into, any kind of rhythm. And his shot seems a little bit more consistent than Ken Birch's. So maybe there's more offense at this point in time, and Ken Birch just isn't ready. I've heard he struggles also in some D-League games, so. Maybe it's better to bring in somebody that's a little bit more polished, with a little bit more experience, a little bit more used to the day-to-day grind of the NBA league. So, I mean, I think they take that very seriously internally with Miami, so it makes sense to bring somebody along like Whiteside.
Well, he just played Sioux Falls in the D-League. He had 24 points on 11 of 12, which sounds like he wasn't taking any jumpers. He's probably right around that rim. And then 16 rebounds, 4 blocks. I don't hate it. I just thought it was kind of, it's just another one of those guys that the Heat kind of signed in the offseason, guys that you like heard about like 2 years ago and kind of forgot about. Ended up working out with Sean Williams. Jury's still out on Shannon Brown. Reggie Williams didn't make the roster. Danny Granger can't stay healthy. But Sean Williams turned out good. I don't know if we see Hassan White's. The reason they signed him was because Chris Anderson's hurt. He took a nasty fall against the Hornets last night.
Actually, I'm sorry, but I thought the original tweet that came out from Mark Stein either came out before or during the Heat game. So apparently they had already made.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I must have missed that tweet.
The timing maybe I got wrong, but from what I remember, it came out right before the game. So apparently they were looking at Whiteside, and it just kind of was fortuitous, I guess, if you want to look at it that way, that you know, Anderson got hurt. So they were apparently looking to bring in some size anyway. I guess that means with Anderson likely shelved for a few games, they're going to keep Andre Dawkins along, or I don't know if they have to option him out to the D-League in order to bring Whiteside in. So that's an interesting turn of events.
I guess we'll find out. That is interesting, because we were talking about the Heat needing to add some big another big guy.
Yeah.
Another center, and it seems like if they were already looking at Whiteside, well, that's certainly interesting. I was gonna say I don't know if he's gonna play before Thanksgiving, but it really depends on how long Chris Anderson's out, and he's at this point right now, 36 years old, where this could be, who knows? I mean, this could be a recurring thing. This could be like a lingering thing. I'm a little nervous about that because even though Chris Anderson wasn't playing as well as he has even last year, he's still the best rim protector on the team.
Yeah.
So that's that's concerning. But
and you also had written something about a report that they were looking to maybe explore a trade with the Cavaliers, however unlikely that might seem, and that Anderson was one of our best trade assets at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how the injury would affect him. I'm seeing another tweet just a few minutes ago that apparently the Cavs are exploring whatever options are available for reserve big men, and they've actually looked into a name that I had been interested in for the Heat, which is Timofey Mozgov from Denver.
Yes, they've been interested in him for a long time.
Yeah, so I think the Anderson possibility, if there was any legs to it to begin with, the rolled ankle probably hurts those chances considerably. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I guess I'm fine with. I didn't want to see either Cole or Anderson in a Cavs jersey anytime soon, so I'm fine with that.
Well, this doesn't roll out Norris Cole going to Cleveland, but
you're right. I still don't think. I mean, I think at this point, Cole. I mean, what could we get in exchange for Cole because of his relatively low salary? I don't know that there's an even swap there as far as getting any kind of. We're not going to get any kind of quality big man that matches up at least contractually with what Norris Cole is worth. So I don't know that they're going to be looking to make that trade. Like we've talked about before, at this point, the Heat have all the cards. They either can keep Cole on the roster, kind of stash him there if, you know, Napier winds up taking off and taking over some of those minutes, which we've already seen throughout the season. And so they keep developing this younger player while paying Cole, you know, relatively little and having a valuable backup there if he winds up losing his starting role. If he becomes a free agent and, you know, matches a qualifying offer if the Heat decide to extend him, then, you know, his value will probably be significantly lower than had he, you know, thrived in the starting role or had traded him away for something. So, I mean, I think Miami's still in a very good place as far as the whole contract situation with Norris is concerned.
I agree. They have options. I think the only... I don't know if they're going to trade him to Cleveland, and you have the whole Rich Paul connection there, but if you're going to trade Norris Cole to Cleveland, the main asset that Cleveland has to give back is that first-round pick that Memphis owes them. And it's a heavily, heavily protected pick, and I explained it in that post that you just mentioned. It's very heavily protected. Top five protected, and then bottom or 15 through 30 protected. So basically you got to fall somewhere between pick 15 and or 6 and 14 for that for the Heat to actually get that within the next couple of years. And then after that, some of the protections come off. But if the Heat don't think that they're going to keep Norris Cole, if they're not even going to offer him the qualifying offer and restricted free agency, then I think that that's the point where you maybe make the move, give him to Cleveland. Cleveland has the Keith Bogans trade exception that they acquired right before the season, so they could just – they don't have to trade anything. The Heat can literally just get the whatever Norris Cole's value is, which is a little bit over $2 million. In a trade exception. So the Heat would actually be gaining an asset in that trade exception as well as Memphis's draft pick. So if they think that unloading Cole would be good in order to start Napier and get that train going a little bit more, then I think that's only the way that they trade him. But I don't know if they get anything back. Heat fans are always saying just trade him to the Knicks and get Shumpert in return. I don't know if that's even an option anymore, but it seemed like that was an option, according to reports, during the draft, possibly. But not so much anymore, I don't think.
And I think what do I know? In a way, it's almost complicated because of the unexpected production of both Napier and Chalmers. I mean, I know Chalmers is playing more off guard, but thriving. I'm sure we'll talk about this more when we look at the last few games, but you know, he's been playing extremely well, and now all of a sudden you have three theoretically starting quality point guards available, and so, you know, what are you going to get in exchange for Cole? I mean, I just don't see it happening, to be honest with you. I don't know. I kind of waffle about this because sometimes I see that it's necessary to move Cole as quickly as possible, but then, you know, what happens to that backup point guard spot? Let's say you anoint Napier as your starting point guard, Wade comes back, but he's going to be in and out of the lineup. I mean, chances are he's going to miss more games as the season goes on, and you need to have some kind of a quality point guard available to rest both Napier, provide some minutes there, and Chalmers, you know, he gives you a lot of flexibility in the sense that he can fill in at either position. So, you know, like I said, I think having that three-headed monster of three point guards there works really, really well. And I think, you know, it's worked reasonably well over the last few games, and I think it'll continue to blossom for Miami.
I agree. I think the reason they trade him is if they want to give Napier the starting job. And at that point, you might as well just trade Cole for whatever, because they wouldn't re-sign him. But that's only, I think, if they really want to give Napier that starting gig. And that's only the point where Cole becomes expendable. Or they can always just trade Cole and re-sign Tony Douglas.
Ooh. He's playing in China, but I guess his contract comes off the books, and eventually he can rejoin an NBA team. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think
that's how it works. Andre Blatch.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, Shannon Brown has experience running the point guard a little bit earlier in his career, so maybe you just make him the backup, the third point guard or whatever. I don't know.
Have you seen anything from Shannon Brown over the last few games? He's obviously getting more playing time with Wade continuing to be out of the lineup. Have you seen anything from Shannon Brown that would justify him getting increased minutes over the next few games?
No. I've seen...
Simple, perfect answer.
I've seen more I dislike than I like. He had that one dunk where against the Magic where... who was defending him? Mo Harkless basically just turned around and lost track of him, even though he was right in front of him. I'm not really sure. Mo Harkless is supposed to be a good wing defender, and he just kind of, like, forgot where he was for a second. And Shane Brown just blew right by him and had a dunk. And so he's got, like, that flashy play. He's got a fast break dunk. He's bad on defense.
Yeah, he is.
He's probably the worst defender on the team. He doesn't do enough on offense for me. He over-dribbles a little bit. Too much. It doesn't seem like he knows where he necessarily, and that's fine. Like, he doesn't get a lot of playing time. He hasn't been with the team long, but doesn't really know where he's supposed to be on offense. I think one of the really good things with the Heat is that they balance the floor so well, and that's something that they've learned the last few years, and it's something that's carried over into this season. We talked about how, like, the ball movement is very reactionary sometimes. They don't really run set plays, especially when Wade's in. They just kind of put the ball in Wade's hands in the post. And players kind of move around and keep the floor balanced depending on where Wade's going with the ball or where he passes the ball or whomever has it. And Shannon Brown just always seems, like, out of place to me. He doesn't really know where he's supposed to be right now in this offense. But it's the only way to kind of fix that is to give him more playing time, but you don't want to give him more playing time because his defense is so poor.
Right. So the two things I've seen, like, he has a general lack of, like, mindfulness. I hate to sound like Phil Jackson, but it's, like, a big point, you know, that he just, like, you like we're talking, you're saying something much more specific than what I am, but I think it can be attributed to both his role on offense and defense, is that he just doesn't seem like he knows where he's supposed to be on either. You know, he makes bad rotations, he lets his player go by, he doesn't switch off on D, and next thing you know, somebody's getting a clear look to the hoop or is open at the perimeter, so... And then on offense, like you just explained, he's just not sure where he needs to be. He crowds the ball a little bit, and next thing you know, you have a double-team situation there because of him. And I think that's just a general lack of mindfulness. And then, have you seen him out on the perimeter where he catches the ball, and then he, like, has, like, a second too long where he's thinking about whether or not he should jack up that three?
Yep.
And it gives the defender just enough time to close out on him, and there goes a busted play that has led to, I think, a couple of times where the shot clock has expired, where he has to force a bad pass because all of a sudden he can't do anything with the ball. I mean, I'm not quite sure what it is. You'd think after 7 years in the league, like, he might be a little bit more aware. I know he doesn't want to take bad shots, and to his credit, he hasn't been taking those, but you have to kind of, you know, make a decision one way or the other. Either you're going to jack up that three and hope that you'll knock it down and shoot with confidence, or, you know, look to pass or drive right to the hoop quickly. You can't just hold the ball because then things get stuck on offense. Somebody's going to get double teamed as a result, and that's going to lead to a turnover, likely.
Yeah, and maybe he's just a slow learner because this didn't – and that's not a knock on him, but, you know, some people are just slow learners, and it's hard to take the court and get some quality playing time. He couldn't make the Knicks roster. He couldn't make the Spurs. You just couldn't last on those teams, and maybe it's just a matter – and I think he got, like, a 10-day contract with the Spurs, and that was about it. Right. They probably saw – he's got all the talent, you know. He can – he's got the talent to make it, but if he just can't really figure out those kind of things – if he just doesn't have a good knack for, you know, maybe he's just a pickup player. I mean, he's just a, you know, the courts kind of player. And maybe he's not an NBA player. I mean, he's not good at the X's and O's things. He's not good at learning it. Maybe he's just a slow learner and he just can't get a hang of it. I don't know.
That's sad.
It's weird because he just can't stay on a roster.
Right.
But, I mean, if I'm the Heat right now, who do you take? Do you take, if you have to make a decision, Andre Dawkins and Shannon Brown? I'm kind of going Dawkins because he's got the three-point shot.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I think, I mean, the way that Brown has been most effective is, you know, he's been running the floor well, or if he gets a fast break opportunity, and that's certainly something that I don't think Dawkins can provide that. I don't think he has that kind of elite type speed, or not as much speed as Brown does anyway, let's say. In the open floor, I would say Shannon Brown's probably better. But for what Miami does with their, you know, running their half-court sets, Dawkins is by far the better floor spacer. He shoots with confidence, despite being a relatively unproven rookie. He's got the range. I mean, I give those minutes. And I know this has been a recurring theme. I know people, you know, probably get tired of us talking about, you know, mixing in these rookies. And I know Spoelstra is probably trying to tighten his rotation, even as he has to continuously change due to injury.
And we saw he basically played eight guys, not in the Hornets game, the game before in the Orlando game. He basically played eight guys. He played McRoberts for 5 minutes, and McRoberts just didn't look right. And he just played eight guys after that. But I'm sorry, keep going.
And I mean, it's going to be a recurring theme, I think. So we're going to have to figure it out, you know, if Spoelstra wants to continue to play Dawkins. I mean, I think he's a valuable player, so it's weird in that, you know, he goes, you know, 11 deep at some point in his rotations, and then all of a sudden he's tightening up a little bit at a time when maybe he should be a little bit less rigid, you know? And I mean, you've got guys that are hurt, you've got guys that are dropping there, and all of a sudden you're going to tighten your rotation even more? I don't understand that. I know you and I have talked about it many times last season when we questioned Spoelstra's decisions, but we were very complimentary of him early on in the season. Now it seems like he's going back, you know, to those old patterns, so... it's just something we're going to have to wait and see if they do make a move or if anybody, you know, once everybody comes back healthy, and I imagine this will change drastically if Granger ever does round into form. I think Spoelstra will be much more confident playing those veterans and hoping that they'll contribute rather than giving the floor to a guy like, you know, Birch if he joins a team, or Hamilton even, or certainly not Dawkins.
You know what? I actually kind of liked the tight rotation he went with against Orlando. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought, because Greg Popovich does the same thing, and you don't always want to compare Spoelstra to Popovich, but he'll just pick random games and experiment. And I think that's all Spoelstra was doing, was he was just experimenting, saying, okay, what if I just went with eight guys tonight? And that's kind of what he did. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with a little bit of experimenting early in the season. But, you know, if Shannon Brown's been getting the start a couple times in the place of Wade, because Spoelstra doesn't want to mess too much with the rotation, still wants to bring Chalmers off the bench. Chalmers got the start a couple times too, but you've noticed he's kind of played around with that backcourt a little bit. I think if Shannon Brown, if his minutes are gone, I think you could just give James Ennis more minutes, and I think you mentioned with Granger, when he gets back, giving him more minutes, maybe even at the two-guard spot. I'd like to see more minutes for Ennis. I think at this point, I'd rather see Ennis on the floor than Shannon Brown. I mean, Ennis has seemed more playable to me. Right,
his defense has been improved. I think
his defense has been much better than Brown's.
Yeah, he's active. He's closing out on guys in the perimeter again. Maybe a little bit of that same mindfulness there, where he gets, you know, lost a little bit on defense. But he's quicker, I think, more athletic and longer.
Mm-hmm.
So he recovers much more effectively than Shannon Brown does, and that, you know, he gets those long, lanky arms of his up in the player's face, and he can affect the shot somewhat. He's still probably a little prone to foul trouble. But overall, at least the effort is there, and that's been a problem at times for Miami. We certainly saw that against the Clippers when there was just hardly any effort at all. And I think actually, if they mounted their comeback, if you want to call it that, where they were able to erase a 24-point deficit and bring it to, I think, I want to say 14. I think that was the closest they got all night in the second through fourth quarters. And I think a lot of that was due to Ennis providing a kind of spark and, you know, obviously Napier providing a boost off the bench as well. So, I think Ennis is a guy you have to continue to incorporate somehow into the lineup. Yeah.
He's not the ball hander that Shannon Brown is, which I think is why Spoelstra likes Shannon Brown in the starting lineup, is because he's a good dribbler. He can handle the ball well. And I guess that's where Ennis's main weakness is. But you can always play Luol Deng at the two and put Ennis at the three.
Yeah, we haven't seen that at all. I don't think there's been any minutes. There haven't been any minutes for Deng at the two guard.
I don't think I've ever seen him there this season. So I don't see why that can't happen.
And I actually read somewhere before the season started, I think that Granger is more frequently getting minutes at the power forward position throughout his career. I mean, that he's played some two guard, but for the most part, he plays in the front court. So he's either at small forward or power forward. So I don't know how realistic that would be, especially with, you know, looking at the upcoming matchups that the Heat will have. I don't see Granger, I mean, if he does, again, get healthy, if he does wind up getting more minutes, I don't see him being at the two guards position. So it's interesting. I think, yeah, Ennis definitely is the better option of the two.
So going back to the big man situation, what do you think about them choosing Whiteside over Birch?
I think it's based on the potential for offense. I guess they're still looking for somebody who, again, you know, maybe there's more experience there. There's maybe a better offensive game overall. And I think those are things that the Heat takes pride in now that they're looking for points. They've been struggling to score. So I think the Whiteside decision is, you know, that's what it's based off of. If you're asking me personally what I think about it, I don't like it. I don't like it because I think that's been part of the problem with Miami over the last few years is that they haven't developed guys. I don't see Whiteside being a long-term contributor. It seems like he's just kind of like a temporary band-aid or something like that. And he doesn't seem like he's liable to stick around for a long period of time. If you're telling me that Birch is going to continue to develop and you're looking maybe much more long-term than even I am, I guess I could understand that perspective. But isn't there a better option? Anybody else that's a better option, even a veteran that might be able to fit in and provide that kind of boost? I mean, if you're looking to have, say, somebody who's more familiar with the inner workings of the league and everything else, and that's what Whiteside provides, you know, isn't there somebody else that's maybe a discount backup that could, you know, play that role rather than having some guy like Whiteside who might be limited and isn't going to be necessarily sticking around for a long period of time? He doesn't give me that vibe of a long-term project, not like Birch does. So I'm not quite sure what the decision process is.
I'm with you. I think the offensive side, he looks to score, and I don't know if Birch does. Like I said in preseason, he doesn't really even look at the rim. I don't even know if he's sure where it's at on offense. But, I think it's an offensive thing. I don't know. I'm interested in watching him play. But
you're assuming he gets playing time. But, I mean, and if anything,
it won't be for a little while, I don't think. Yeah. But, yeah, I'm assuming as long if Birdman's out, I don't know what other choice they have. They can't – they're going to find out really quick that they're not going to be able to play Haslam the same amount of minutes they're playing Anderson. It's just not going to work. And I think that's the thing with Birch is if you bring in Birch now, you're kind of – you're stepping on Haslam's toes a little bit because he's the rebounding energy guy. Or that's who they think he still is, or they treat him as such. And that's basically what Birch's role would be. And you also, once Justin Hamilton gets back too, that'll be another thing. Is Hamilton will get the minutes before Whiteside, probably, I would assume. But you never know with Spoelstra.
Isn't he available at this point? I mean, I don't think he's...
Yeah, I think he's available. He's been active. They just haven't been playing him.
Okay.
So whenever, I guess, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. As soon as they feel comfortable trying to play Hamilton.
And, I mean, the Haslam, I mean, it worked against Orlando and against Charlotte, I want to say. He played against Charlotte more effectively. I mean, he didn't have a great game, but he was able to defend fairly well, I think. I'm trying to remember if there was anything that stood out. I mean, it's sad that we've just kind of gone to this point where we're looking for any big play out of Udonis and hoping that we can hang our hat on that and say, oh, this is, you know, there's still shades of the player he once was. You know, looking at upcoming matchups, you know, against Golden State, I just don't see how he's going to be able to play. I know that Bogut might be out against the Heat on Tuesday, so that's a good thing. But Maurice Spites, who will probably start in his place, can Haslam contain him? I don't think so.
Spates is having a really good year. He's taken a step forward this year. I don't think Haslam. Haslam might be able to contain him, but Spates has got some post moves now, and he might just blow by Haslam on a couple of plays. That Golden State game's gonna be rough. Even if Bogut's not playing, I don't know.
I mean, he was their leading scorer. He was the Golden State's leading scorer against Oklahoma City a couple nights ago.
Well, it was last night, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, he seems like he's an improved player for sure. So that's gonna be an interesting one. But they don't have much else after that, though. I mean, so he starts. Who comes in there and replaces him then?
Who, Haslam or Spates?
No, Spates.
Oh well, they have Festus Ezeli. They have another some big white European guy. they have more depth even with Bogut out than we do, which is a problem. Let's talk about the weekend games because those are pretty good. The Magic game and the Hornets game. Start with Saturday against the Magic. What did you make of the whole Elfrid Payton, Victor Oladipo, Nikola Vucevic, that young core that they got in Orlando?
Much more impressive than I would have thought. I guess I really hadn't seen much of Payton play. I know he'd fallen a little bit out of favor. I guess he was demoted. I'm not sure if that's the right word. I don't really follow Orlando closely enough to say. But I know he had been starting games, and then he was kind of put on the reserve.
It was more because Oladipo came back from his face getting broken.
Yeah.
And so you can't. It's hard to play Oladipo and Payton together because they're both really bad offensively. So that pretty much like just bogs them down on offense. So I think that's why they took Payton out of the starting unit and put Oladipo at point guard just to kind of stagger their minutes. I think that's all it was.
But Payton, he looked very impressive. Mm-hmm. I mean,
he was
athletic. You know, playing the passing lanes perfectly. I mean, you know, a little bit creating some havoc there. He was a problem for the Heat down the stretch. I don't think they were expecting him to provide that kind of boost and harass Napier, who's looked solid overall. But I think his length and his defensive abilities were a problem for Miami to contain. I didn't see much out of Oladipo. I guess he's still kind of rounding into form. But Vucevic, I mean, you and I had talked about him before. I guess, you know, you said his numbers were somewhat inflated. And, you know, we did see that one play where he grabbed four rebounds.
Four offensive rebounds.
Yeah. Is that more about, you know, Vucevic's ability or more about the fact that we don't have anybody over 6'10 who can grab a rebound? Because that was pathetic.
Well, that's what happens when you have nobody over 6'10, like you're saying, that can rebound. And a Magic center who just can't seem to put the ball in when he's 2 inches away and just keeps... Half of me thinks he did it on purpose, just to inflate his rebounding numbers.
Does he get like a signing, a bonus of some kind?
Right.
Something triggers after that. You know,
free Pizza rebounds. Hut when he hits 12 rebounds.
Yeah, he gets tickets to Disney World. they look like they've got a good core in place. I mean, obviously, I don't know, you can't say much about Channing Frye. He looked so good last season, and then, you know, a lot of people thought he might be a nice pickup this year, but he seems to be struggling. He wasn't the dangerous, you know, outside shot that he had been at other times, so he doesn't seem like a long-term piece there. I mean, I don't know how long his deal was for. I think it's 4 years, and so I want to say it's a four-year deal.
Sounds about right. That sounds right.
And that seems like a mistake looking at, you know, his advanced age and then the fact that he's no longer as effective as he once was.
Yeah.
You know, Ben Gordon was surprisingly good for Orlando, and I know he's always been a problem for Miami, but I mean, he still looked like he was pretty solid, and that's scary that he could come in there and continue to shoot against Miami the way he has throughout his whole career.
Yeah,
you know, what are you going to say about Orlando? They seem to be constantly rebuilding and never have this clear-cut identity. I have such a hard time trying to figure out what that team is, and I know that people who support the Magic, and you know, you probably have a lot of more acquaintances in that realm than I do, but I don't know what to make of this Orlando team. They've got good pieces there, but they're still clearly a superstar away from being a legitimate threat.
My thing with Magic fans is they're delusional about they think Vucevic is the next, is nobody gives him enough credit. And I was talking to my friend about this the other day. Every time you watch a Magic game, the visiting announcing crew always says things like, it's only a matter of time before the rest of the league gets a sniff of this Vucevic guy. Or something, like, just something stupid like that. And first of all, I pointed out on Twitter, he had 20-something points by the start of the fourth quarter, already had his double-double with rebounds, had a -2 PER. He is horrid on defense. Chalmers took advantage of him, absolutely played him. There's that one play where he went around under the rim.
Yes.
Vooch got, you know exactly what I'm talking about, got switched on him, and he just played him out to the three-point line and then just blew right by him for a layup. I mean, he knew exactly what he was doing because they've played this guy a million times over, and Chalmers knows exactly how to attack him at this point. He lacks lateral quickness, and he just could not. That's why the Heat just started running those. I thought Spo did a really good coaching job in this game, by the way. Started running all those side pick and rolls in the second half. Took Napier off, point guard. Gave Chalmers the point guard duties. He matches up a little bit more with Peyton's length, because, like you said, Napier was really struggling with Peyton's length. And they just started running those Bosch and Chalmers side pick and rolls, and Vucevic just didn't have the lateral quickness to switch back on to Bosch and just was let him. And he does that mental thing where he just kind of spaces out a little bit on defense and just doesn't really know that he's supposed to like get up on Bosch because Bosch can shoot the three-pointer. But
33 points. I'm looking at it now. You finished with 33 points.
How do you lose when your center scores 33 points?
Yeah, it's mind-boggling.
It is. But he's irrelevant 15 feet away from the basket, and he's a poor defender. And when you're, yeah, maybe he can score 33 points and get something, what do you get, like 14 rebounds or something?
17
rebounds.
Yeah.
That's a monster game, and they still lost. And right. And towards the end of that game, it was pretty, like, it wasn't a close one. The Heat basically ran away with that thing, so.
And to your point, now that I'm thinking about it, I was listening to the Orlando broadcast mm-hmm. team, and you just said he's irrelevant from 15 feet out, and they say the exact opposite. And every time he touches the ball, it's, you know, from mid-range, he's like, all right, he can make that shot. And then he misses and clanks it off the rim. It's like,
right. He takes the shot.
Yeah.
He's got, it's almost the J.R. Smith thing. Oh, I take all these shots, but you don't really make most of them. You kind of, like, you're not a great shooter. You just take a lot of shots. And I think he tricks his announcing crew into thinking that. But he either he's got to do one of two things to actually be a legitimate threat. Get better on defense or expand his range to the three-point line. Other than that, he's going to be marginalized for the rest of his career because he's a poor defender and he's irrelevant 15 feet beyond. And that's not enough in this NBA.
No. He got one less block than Sean Williams that night. That should tell you how effective he was on defense. He got one less block. He got one block and Sean Williams had two.
I'm biased because I really don't like Vucevic. I don't like Magic fans in general, sure. So it always makes me kind of go against what they're doing. I do like the rest of that roster. I really like, and I don't like, except for Tobias Harris. I don't like Tobias Harris, but that's a Tennessee thing. I don't like Tennessee. It's nothing against Tobias Harris other than the fact that he went to Tennessee.
Okay.
I like Oladipo a lot. I love Alfred Payton. Also, if I have to read one more tweet about Alfred Payton's hair, there's not an original tweet left, so stop tweeting about it, people.
I didn't notice anything. What about his
hair? You don't see a ton of tweets about his hair?
Maybe I'll just shut them all down. I think after the LeBron James hairline thing, I kind of just stopped.
Did you mute hair on Twitter?
Can you block any certain words from your timeline there? Because that's what I just don't want to hear anything about hair anymore.
But I like the rest of that roster. I like Mo Harkless, even though he botched that Shannon Brown thing. In general, he's a good. I think he's got a good future as like a 3-and-D guy. I know that, and I love Aaron Gordon. By the way, I think he's going to be something special. But he didn't play; he's been hurt. So hopefully he gets back soon because he's fun to watch. But yeah, other than that, that roster's good. I just don't know if they're really tying their future into Vucevic. I'm not sure that that's going to work out. And I was talking to my friend about it the other day, and I came up with a game. It's we get to listen to Rob Hennigan try to trade Vucevic, and Magic fans get the audio recording of it. And they'll be surprised by how little they can get in return for him, I think. If talking to other NBA GMs. Like I said, like every broadcast, it's only a matter of time before everybody else hears. The NBA knows that he's not good at a lot of things, and that he's really good at just like two things. Offensive rebounding, his own shot, and not making his own shot.
that's a really specialized skill set.
He's a niche player.
Yeah.
But I was surprised. Going back to the Heat, I thought Spoelstra did a good job. He found the weakness and he just attacked it, and he basically just stuck to that one side pick and roll the rest of that fourth quarter, and they feasted on it. Moving on to the Hornets game, Bosch with that game-winning baseline fadeaway. That's basically my takeaway from the game, right? Bosch had a good game, finally, and he had a couple good games this weekend, and then he hit that game-winner.
Yeah, 32 points against the Magic and then the game-winner. That was a very nice cap on a great weekend for him.
And Al Jefferson should have won that game for them. There was no reason. The Heat basically had no business winning that game. Al Jefferson should have hit that bunny. That was a little Tim Duncan-ish.
One of the greatest players of all time, and we're reminding everybody about the one bunny he missed in the 2013.
This is why people hate Heat fans.
We're not the worst. I'm sure there's a worse bunch out there.
Yeah, Orlando fans.
Lakers fans? Come on. The deification of Kobe Bryant continues. I mean, he can do no wrong, right?
No, he can take the 50-foot three-point jumpers all he wants, however long that was. Did you see the video of that?
I haven't, actually.
Oh, it wasn't 50 feet. I'm exaggerating. He was like 4 feet behind the three-point line, and he just chucked up a shot with like 6 seconds left on the shot clock.
He was wide open. Why not take it? That's what Lakers
He was does. Open because nobody's covering him that far away from the basket.
And he can do no wrong. So that Charlotte game was nice in that I thought there were moments there where they might – extend their lead even further, and the Heat were able to show some pretty serious grit there. I know that's kind of cliche or whatever, but you know, we'd seen without Wade that they struggled to come back from pretty decent deficits. They were down 8 to the Hornets team, who are, you know, they have their own offensive struggles, particularly in the second half. But you know, for the Heat to be able to pull out that victory, it was a good win overall. You know, Chalmers continues to be a real great player this season. I mean, it's amazing. I think everybody else is going to start noticing it now. I mean, I've been talking about him as a legitimate six-man candidate, and I don't see why he doesn't start to get that buzz pretty legitimately around the league, because I think he's earned it. I mean, 44 points over the last two games, and he's effective getting to the rim. He's always had that kind of fearlessness there, but you know, he's doing it much more effectively than he has in the past. So
it's only a matter of time before the rest of the league gets a whiff of it.
Just like Vucevic.
Just like Vucevic.
The underappreciated team. The all underappreciated team.
It's Vucevic and Chalmers.
Luol Deng. I mean, he was
great. Great game. He put my words right in my mouth. I was actually earlier in the day finishing up a little bit of a stat breakdown about how much worse his stats are without Dwayne Wade. And he basically just scored 30 points last night and shut me up real quick.
But that's because Chalmers is playing that Wade-ish role, right? Of being like, I mean, he's looking for guys and he's driving to the rim.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
true.
And finding, yeah, Deng on the perimeter. So I mean, there were a number of passes there that were very Wade-like, and the way he was able to find Deng in the right spots. And to his credit, though, Deng was feeling it. Like at one point, he rose up to take a shot, even though it was contested, and he was able to knock down a three-pointer that I don't think we've seen him make throughout most of the season. So I think that was just a very good game from him. Now, the problem with that was that, you know, the last good game that he had, which was against Dallas, he kind of stunk it up a little bit the following game, which was against the Pacers, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
So I'm curious to see how he responds on Tuesday against the Warriors. That should be an interesting matchup for him.
Yeah, and the Warriors have a number of guys that they can throw at him. They could put Draymond Green on him, Iguodala on him. He probably has the worst matchup in that game, other than whoever gets tasked with playing center for us.
There's no one matchup that they don't have an advantage at, right? I think maybe at center.
Depending if Bogut plays, yeah.
And Sean Williams will probably be stuck guarding him in the way he has to keep Bosch out of foul trouble. So, I mean, that could be a problem. I mean, is Shannon Brown going to start tomorrow and try to guard Klay Thompson?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I hope not.
Do we see the first start of the Napier era and then have Chalmers try and match up with Thompson? Either way, that seems like a bad matchup for Miami.
Yeah, but that would make one of my preseason predictions correct, that Napier would start at least one game. So, there's that positive.
Because Cole is definitely out tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything other than that. He won't. Yeah, he's probably out. I don't know if... Have we heard that for certain that he's out? I don't think we have.
No.
But it would shock me if he played before Thanksgiving. I thought that was... It always seemed like it was kind of the plan, was just to let him rest until Thanksgiving.
And I really hope that Wade would get some minutes against Charlotte last night so that he could participate. You know, we talked about the big game atmosphere. It's on national television and BTV and everything else. And so I had thought that maybe he'd be, you know, willing to come out there on Tuesday. But I guess, you know, even though he's had some action on the court, he's not really ready for the game type situation. So I guess he's not going to be playing tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't think he is. And I'm just really excited for this team to get healthy. I'm really hoping that after this break that we see more Mick Roberts and we start seeing more of what this team's actually going to look like. Are you concerned about Mick Roberts at all? Because I'm a little concerned.
His biggest issue has been, what, his three-point shooting?
Just his lingering injury thing. Like, why can't he play more than 15 minutes in a game? Why hasn't he been able to start yet?
How long did he play against Charlotte? I don't think it was over 10 minutes, I think.
I'm not even sure exactly. All those games are... All the Mick Roberts games are forgettable. I can look it up. But, the fact remains he hasn't started yet. He was supposed to be the starting power forward. I'm not necessarily sure that the Heat are rushing to put him in the lineup because Sean Williams is playing so well.
Yeah.
But it's still like... You know, he still just doesn't look right. I mean, I already mentioned it against the Magic. He played 5 minutes and then came out and that was it. He just didn't look right. I don't know.
17 minutes against the Hornets last night.
Yeah. Yeah.
1 of 5 shooting, 1 of 3 from downtown. Not a great game. I mean, he the passing is still there somewhat, but he's just looking rusty overall. I mean, is this just a lost season for Mick Roberts where he's just going to be nursing those injuries?
That's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm wondering. Because at the first, the reason they were giving us that he wasn't playing was because he hadn't practiced because of the toe surgery in the offseason. But it seems like he's been practicing and he's been with the team. Now is like kind of and he had that blister that kind of set him back a little bit. Yeah. But I feel like at this point, the only way to get him acclimated is to play him, right? And he's playing so little. I mean, 17 minutes was good and he struggled, but the game before that, he played 5. It just seems like his minutes are really inconsistent. I'd like to at least just get him in the starting unit. If that's indeed the plan, unless they think that they're just going to start bringing him off the bench and they like Sean Williams as the stretch four guy and they've just kind of shifted from that. It'd be interesting to see if they actually want Mick Roberts in the starting lineup anymore. You would assume with the money they paid him that they do.
I think it's just, a weird season for Miami overall where they're still trying to find exactly what works best. And there's got to be a longer-term plan in place here. I think we're going to see, the injuries probably move this along further or more quickly than they had expected, but there were going to be times early in the season where they were going to try to move players in and out to see what works best, that experimentation that you talked about. And I think the injuries have just kind of sent that to the next level or whatever, where they have to kind of play guys and see who can contribute on a nightly basis and kind of just go with your gut feel. It's a very challenging position that Spoelstra's in, and it's worked because we have a winning record, but there were times there during that 3-game losing streak where it did not look very good, and this roster seemed like maybe there were no answers there, and I don't know, and maybe it's too dire to say that there was no hope for the future, but it's a tough spot for the team to be in because they don't know what they can get. They have been hoping for more out of Granger, Mick Roberts, etc. They're not going to get it anytime soon. At least it doesn't look like to me.
Right. But on the flip side, they did get, it seems like, more from Ennis and Napier than I think they expected.
Right.
So that's good.
That is true. And I wrote about this, and I've heard other people say this, is that I think that if health winds up improving overall, like you just mentioned, it's going to be a really good, much deeper team that's going to have much more experience because, Ennis is playing a lot more than anybody would have anticipated at the start of the season. Napier is getting more time, he possibly starting at some point. Even Shannon Brown is getting a little burn. All these guys that are, be counted on at some point as the late season push, is a reality for this team. I think, the Eastern Conference is so wide open. You're going to have so many different teams jockeying for seeding, the ever-crucial home court advantage. Mm-hmm. And I think this Heat team is going to be well-positioned for it because they're going to have, much more depth because some of these players are getting that much-needed experience earlier in the season rather than later. And you can only hope that, it's going to be improved as far as their overall health is concerned. So, you know, it could be a blessing in disguise. It's just too early to tell at this point.
Want to look forward to the next week or this week's games?
Absolutely. Let's, I mean, we talked about the Warriors already, so.
Right. So Sunday against the Knicks after Thanksgiving.
Hopefully Wade comes back and has a big game at Madison Square Garden. That should be a very interesting one.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the Knicks play once, and that's rare that I haven't seen them play at least once this season.
I watched them a lot earlier in the year and kind of got away from it. Early in the year, they were just frustrating. Carmelo Anthony's still doing... He had a quote, or Phil Jackson had a quote about Carmelo early in the year, how, or before the season started, how he's not going to have to take those Carmelo Anthony shots anymore, where he's just going to chuck it up at the end of games. And basically, that's what he's been having to do. So, yeah, that triangle's not really taking shape. And they're kind of a mess.
Are you baking something, or is that like...
Are you hearing that beeping? That So my Mac has the iMessage thing on it.
Oh, okay.
And
so I had a vision of you in an apron baking like muffins or something like that.
No, I made banana bread the other day, actually. So that was actually my first time baking anything in my life. I don't know why I wanted to do it. It got cold out here in the Bay Area, and I was like, you know what? I feel like something warm. So I baked banana bread. I also had a bunch of bananas that I wasn't going to eat that were going to go bad.
Yes. So. That is, I've heard from experienced bakers that is the key, is to have like a...
Oh, really?
Like a banana, yeah, on its last legs. Yeah, that's apparently... You know, right before they get to the point...
Well, my bananas had no legs, so... Wow. Nailed that one.
Yeah, so we're quickly devolving here, so let's pick it back up.
Well, you didn't ask me how the banana bread turned out.
Well, if you made it, I'm sure it turned out fantastic.
There we go. So, yeah, the Knicks, I'm not sure. Carmelo Anthony could tear him apart, but...
Sean Williams, does he have a welcome back to New York game and show everybody what they're missing out?
If they even remember him.
Of course they do. He was a vital part of that team a few years ago.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how many of those Knicks fans are still there anymore.
You know,
that should be a win. I mean, that should absolutely be a win.
Are we making predictions? I agree with you then. I think they could win in New York. I think hopefully they'll have enough time to recover, get a couple players back, and hopefully make a strong push there. That should be a good one. Although, of course, it is a back-to-back. Another back-to-back set, and they take on the Washington Wizards at Washington the following day.
Hot Washington Wizards. They're playing really well. Paul Pierce is really starting to fit in there. John Wall's an absolute monster. Marcin Gortat's going to tear us apart, as he always does. That's probably a loss, right? I mean, in Washington?
I would think so. I think that now that the team is back, they had those suspensions and a couple players that were out due to injury on opening night. We kind of embarrassed them a little bit to start the season, and obviously they've been... Mm-hmm. Picking up their pace recently. They had a nice big win over Cleveland, but then that's not saying much, I suppose. And they look like a really solid team.
Otto Porter's coming along, which is huge. It's been huge for them. Yeah, if we're gonna predict 1-1, right? That what did you predict for this slate? You were kind of optimistic, right?
I envisioned that Wade would be available over the weekend, and that players would stay healthy, and silly me, I had assumed that we weren't going to have anybody, lose a couple more games due to injury. I didn't anticipate. Well, I guess, when we spoke last, that was before the Clippers game.
Correct.
So.
But we're not talking about that Clippers game.
No, I know. Yeah, we're not. So Cole was fine. Wade looked like he might bounce back. I think I predicted that he might come back against the Clippers, being on national television, et cetera. That was a bust. So if he doesn't play then, you're still looking at maybe coming back against the weekend against these two weaker, theoretically, teams in Orlando and Charlotte. He doesn't play then. So I had hoped that he was going to be ready by now so that we could have a decent, a legitimate chance at beating Golden State.
Yeah, you said 3-1.
Yeah. I'm totally rescinding my prediction there. I think 2-2 is as good as we're going to get, which is what your original prediction was. So.
I was going to say it, but thanks for...
Oh, you nailed it. You said 2-2. I mean, you didn't give them any chance against Golden State or against Charlotte, though. You thought we'd win in L.A.
No, I said we were going to beat Orlando and Charlotte and we were going to lose against the Clippers. Because remember how low I said we had no chance against the Clippers because we weren't going to be able to stop Blake Griffin? I'm pretty sure that's what I said. We can go back to the tape. We'll figure it out.
Don't we have somebody like a stats guy or something like that? We needed somebody to check up on us and make sure that we're accurate in everything we say.
They don't need to do that. We're pretty accurate, I think.
So I think Golden State looks much more like a loss than we had anticipated. The Knicks seems like a victory, hopefully. And then against Washington, wow. It's just hard for me to envision, unless you have like an amazing performance where Deng has like one of those monster games that we've seen and really is managing to get either Pierce or Porter or somebody else into foul trouble there, and they don't have any reliable option off the bench to provide a little bit of scoring. But their front court just is, it's just so much bigger, so much better than ours at this point, even with Chris Bosh playing as well as he has. I don't see a chance for a victory at Washington on the second night of a back-to-back.
That's the thing. It's that second night of the back-to-back. If it wasn't, I'd give the Heat a much better chance. But that second night, that's tough. Especially in Washington. Second night on the road, that's hard. So, I think that's pretty much going to be a loss there. But it wouldn't surprise me if they won. I don't think it's as foregone as that Warriors game or that Clippers game. I think those were basically just 0% chance of winning. I still don't think that the Heat have a chance of winning tomorrow night. But who knows? They might, it's the Wizards. It's a conference game. It's a little bit more get up. It's after Thanksgiving. Maybe Wade's back. Who knows? We'll see. Wade playing, I think, is the only chance they have in that game.
I mean, they've struggled against divisional teams, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, it's competitive. No, actually, it's always competitive.
Think about it. Yeah, they got that opening night victory. They beat Charlotte and they beat Orlando. So without the last two victories, maybe it would have looked a little differently because they had lost to Atlanta and to Charlotte.
Right.
So they're 3-2 in the division. I guess this game against Washington is maybe a tiebreaker there. Or could tie the situation up. And I mean, those games become much more crucial as the season progresses if we're continuing to, again, fight for playoff seeding, etc. So it's important that we muster our best effort against Washington, but it's going to be a very difficult matchup.
Cereal or not cereal?
Let's do it.
Knicks.
Clearly cereal, right?
Yeah, that was the easy one.
But, I mean, what kind of cereal could it be? Okay, let's say the cereal is comprised of maybe a few grains and oats here and there, but just two really big marshmallows, one in the shape of Carmelo Anthony, another one like J.R. Smith. Does that seem right? I mean, is there any kind of cereal in the reality that might fit the mold of that team there?
Like Lucky Charms?
Maybe. I don't know, but how lucky have they been? I mean,
That's true. Not lucky at all. What other cereals have marshmallows in them now that I'm thinking about it? Does Lucky Charms have a monopoly on marshmallow cereal?
Apple Bits? Am I right there? I haven't had
the hell is Apple Bits?
I think there's a cereal called Apple Bits. God, I'm not that old.
Where's our stat guy?
Yeah, let's do a run of different cereals. Either way, clearly there's cereal. I mean, mostly just junk food. Maybe it's like, maybe they don't even have actual cereal though. Maybe it's more like a marshmallow and Cheetos combination.
Or they just... One of those kids that try to put chocolate milk in their cereal and think they're the smartest kid ever and think they're the first person that ever thought of that.
I've never thought of that before.
Really? Maybe I was the first kid to think about that. Chocolate milk in your cereal? Yeah, why not?
Everybody does, huh? I'd never consider it, but I'd say they're definitely a cereal team. Probably not a particularly good tasting one. Maybe even a little bit moldy at times. So
a little like a granola Zen kind of. I don't know.
Eventually, they'll get to that point. Right now,
yeah, not yet. Not
right now. They're Cheetos and marshmallows.
Cheetos and marshmallows cereal with chocolate milk. I'm gonna go throw up. At Washington Wizards.
Cereal.
Yeah, I think we played two cereal teams on back-to-back cereal.
And we had been waffling as far as...
Oh, waffling. Nice.
As far as the Golden State, I think we agreed that they were not cereal.
Correct. I think that's a tough one, but I think you and I both came up with not cereal.
Okay. So it's an interesting week for the Heat.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Some no cereal and then back-to-back cereal games. Right after Thanksgiving, David, what are you thankful for this Heat season?
I'm not going to say Chris Bosh, although that's the obvious thing, but I am thankful for Mario Chalmers because he's reminded me of his brilliance yet again. I mean, it's such a fun roller coaster with Mario. You never know what you're going to get, and it's just been an exciting season overall because of Mario, I think.
I like that Mario pick, but I'm going to go with the other point guard, Shabazz Napier. I'm thankful for Shabazz. Not because of the way he is playing so much as there's that promise for growth and potential. And I'm thankful for the potential that is Shabazz Napier.
Yeah, I agree. And there is a lot of potential there, and it's coming a lot closer to being fully realized than we would have given him credit at the beginning of the year, right? I mean,
yeah.
Considering how poorly he shot, I don't think either of us expected him to be shooting 41% from three-point range. And I know you mentioned this before.
The broadcast said before that he's at the highest percentage out of rookies for his field goal percentage.
Really?
I think that's what the broadcast said during the Magic game. So I don't know if it's come off since, because I know he struggled a little bit later in that Magic game, but he was good early.
That's still a lot higher than you'd expect.
Oh, absolutely. Especially you couldn't even find the rim in preseason.
Right.
In summer league, it was god awful.
And you've mentioned that at some point they're going to have to change the scouting report to be a little bit cautious about that legitimate three-point range that we hadn't expected early in the season, mm-hmm. and then maybe as a result that'll clear open some passing lanes there, right? I mean, or his ability to drive to the rim more effectively, I think you had Absolutely. Mentioned something like that. I can't remember at one point, that's either via text or by tweet, but you may mention about Napier and having defenders close out on those long-range shots because they're becoming much more of a weapon.
And that's what you see from Steph Curry. I don't know if Napier will ever beat Steph Curry from three-point range, but that would be terrific. But, that's what you see with Curry. He just has all the room in the world because people have to play up on him. And they can't give him any space, which just puts so much room behind the defender for him to just put those pass. And he's a terrific passer, Curry is. So you just combine those two things, and it's like Steve Nash-type things there. But what was I going to go with? I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. This is the worst podcast ever.
No, I think the worst one was still that very first one at the beginning of the season.
That depressing one was really depressing.
We lost any listeners after that. Or, they refused to listen to us, but, maybe they're no longer clinging to this mortal coil.
No, I mean, about Napier, though, yeah, he's got that field goal percentage. I don't know. Oh, here we're going. The Heat fans were very, very upset that we had not gone after Eric Bledsoe, I think, harder than we did. And I mentioned before, they were going to have to sign him to more than what Phoenix signed him, because Phoenix was able to match. You're going to spend a lot of money on that. And you're basically, if you're signing Bledsoe, you're banking on him being the third star. And you're going to forego that free agency of 2016, more than likely. And or being a major player like some other teams would be. But by having Napier, and if you develop Napier correctly, he's on that rookie scale contract. If he can be anywhere near, if he could just be above average at point guard, which is basically what the Heat were looking for this offseason before they ended up settling for Chalmers, which is basically what they did, and drafting Napier because LeBron wanted him, which is pretty much what they did, it's going to end up being a much better deal for the Heat in the long term than it would have been going after signing Kyle Lowry or signing Eric Bledsoe to a major deal. I think this is going to turn out better in the long run.
Has any player in recent history generated more of a prolonged buzz as a rookie for the Heat than Shabazz Napier? I mean, I keep getting this sense that everybody is in love with this kid, and it's only been a few games into the season, but they're already expecting great things from him.
I don't know. That's a great question. Since Wade, basically?
Yeah. And even then,
how was Beasley? Like, I feel like we kind of, the Heat were so bad. But right before Beasley,
And it was surely off of that championship season that really plummeted, and then we traded Shaquille away, and so there was a lot of a lot of hard feelings amongst the Heat fan base, and I think we knew what we were getting from Beasley as far as the very accurate scouting reports regarding his mental.
Miami was the worst place for him to start his career.
You know, I wonder about that, but I think, you know, you say that maybe the allure of the club scene and women and drugs and everything else that you might be able to find there. But
it's just too easy to find. Like, if he started his career in Milwaukee or Utah, we might be talking about an all-star right now.
But is that a legitimate concern? Because, I mean, you're an NBA player. You're a 19, 20-year-old, I think he was 19 at that point, millionaire overnight. Maybe not necessarily the best head on your shoulders. If you want to find something, you're going to find it.
That's true.
And whether you're finding it, and I would think that you almost would be less likely to indulge in all the opportunities that are available to a young millionaire if you have to do it out in public the way that he did in Miami, as opposed to behind closed doors when you're, you know, when it's, you know, 30 below outside in Minnesota or whatever. I mean, he wasn't any better. I mean, Phoenix is when he had his worst string of you know,
brushes. That's true.
And Phoenix is a pretty wide open city there. I mean, maybe not necessarily the club scene that you find in Miami, but I mean,
he also, I think, hit a low, maybe like a personal low, lost confidence, but tried to find an outlet. I don't know. But I think when we start playing psychiatrists, it's time to wrap up the podcast. What do you think?
That's good.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, David.
Likewise.
All right. Have a good turkey. Enjoy your stuffing.
And, I don't eat turkey. I'm a vegetarian.
Oh, that's right. Eat tofurkey?
Yes.
All right. Enjoy that tofurkey.
I will. It's delicious.
See you, David.
All right, man. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Heat Check podcast. Remember, you can follow us on SoundCloud or subscribe to us on iTunes if you're not already. Rate us. Say nice things about us. Give us a 4-star review or even a 5-star review. We would really appreciate it. And you can always check out the podcast and all of our writing at allyoucanheat.com.